This podcast is brought to you by the Department of War Studies at King's College London. This is Kirk Allen with your War Studies podcast. Since the year 2000, the UN Security Council has adopted 8 resolutions, which make up what is known as the Women, Peace, and Security Agenda. These resolutions work to promote gender equality and strengthen women's rights, protections, and participation in mending conflict-torn societies. The first of these historic UN Security Council resolutions, 1325, provides a political framework that outlines how women and gender perspectives are crucial for negotiating sustainable peace, planning refugee camps, implementing peacekeeping operations, and recovering conflict-torn societies. The advent of the Women, Peace, and Security Agenda has been followed by a growing emphasis on the need to mainstream gender into the institutions that govern and practice war and conflict management. Additionally, universities are seen to be increasingly incorporating more feminist teaching, courses, and programs on gender and international relations in response to student demand. As the need for gender education and perspectives are increasingly emphasized and understood in the realm of conflict and security, how are military and academic institutions following through on the need to diversify training and teaching practices? To help us delve into this question, we are first going to hear from Dr. Hannah Pardis Jennings, lecturer at Loughborough University, and Dr. Catherine Wright, lecturer at Newcastle University, who I interviewed the day before they co-convened a BISA Gendering IR Working Group workshop at KCL, titled Training, Teaching, and Learning Gender in War and Militarism. Then, to conclude this podcast, we are going to welcome Dr. Amanda Chisholm, who is a new senior lecturer and the Diversity and Inclusion Lead in the School of Security Studies at KCL, for a discussion on the importance of teaching and learning on gender in the context of security studies. Now to my interview with Drs. Pardis Jennings and Wright. Welcome to the War Studies Podcast. Can you introduce yourselves for us?
So I'm Dr. Catherine Wright. I'm a lecturer in international politics at Newcastle University and also the co-convener of the BISA Gendering IR Working Group.
So I'm Dr. Hannah Pardis Jennings. I am a lecturer in international relations at Loughborough. I'm also a co-convener of the BISA Gendering IR Working Group.
Thank you for joining us. Can you tell us a little about tomorrow's workshop and its key objectives?
I'll start by saying that this is a working group event, so a BISA Gendering IR Working Group event. It is part of a wider series of events that mark the 30th anniversary celebrations of this working group. To focus in a little bit more, the event itself, the workshop, is called Training, Teaching and Learning Gender in War and Militarism. So it's got kind of two facets. It's about gender and conflict in an overarching sense in two streams. In the university context and in the kind of military institutional context. So our objective is to do what Roland Bleecker calls create thinking space, in a way motivated by what Cynthia Enloe calls feminist curiosity. So we're creating thinking space around these issues. That's our kind of primary objective. So we want to think about how feminist principles, ideas, and ethics feed into teaching. That's the university strand of this workshop, and training in military institutional contexts. And we would like to do this by bringing students and academics and policymakers into a room to have these kind of cross-boundary conversations. So the style of the workshop is open and conversational. There are kind of key questions and themes that we've given to our participants, and we're very much drawing on their expertise, but also their experiences. So kind of bringing the personal and the political together in that sense. Why is the context specifically focusing, why is the workshop specifically focusing on gender and conflict? Well, the reason for that is kind of multifaceted. Firstly, of course, the School of Security Studies is hosting this event, and it's a great opportunity to draw on some of the expertise and interest within the school. But very importantly, secondly, it's because gender is so vital to our understanding of how war, conflict and peace actually work. And because there has been some recent push in the military context and in the university context to recognize that. But we want to take stock here and understand how far beyond the kind of rhetorical commitment to including a gender module or a gender week, as Catherine refers to it, you know, the gender week, right? How far, say, is that commitment in the university context and then the kind of gender mainstreaming rhetorical commitment in other, say, military institutional contexts, how far is that being implemented in practice? And where are the tensions between feminist principles and ethics and ideologies and the implementation of these ideas in practice? There are tensions, and how do we navigate those tensions and work with and through them? So feminist principles in university and in military institutions, and then moving beyond rhetoric in university contexts and in military institutions, just to see, is that possible? Is it being done? And to have these kind of conversations about the key challenges and the key opportunities that have been opened up by this wider push to consider gender a key facet of understanding conflict.
Yeah, and I think just to add on to what Hannah said, I think the idea from the workshop partly came and was inspired by our own research and from talking from individuals tasked with implementing or mainstreaming gender within military and security institutions, and actually thinking, hey, they're kind of facing some of the challenges that we're facing within the university setting, and also kind of individuals teaching within military settings coming up against the same sort of things that we are. So actually thinking this could be a useful space to share lessons about how to effectively teach on gender and how to mainstream gender teaching throughout courses and not just have what I do call the dreaded gender week.
So how is the topic of gender taught and learned in the context of war, conflict management, and military institutions?
So actually, this relates quite a lot to Catherine's work. So I'm going to start talking here, but I think that Catherine is somebody that has a much greater level of expertise on this. What I will say is that I think there is a need to recognize that gender is quite context specific, that the gendered experiences, gendered cultures, gendered social roles, specific and of course relating to other facets of people's identity, like race, like ethnicity, like class and wealth and so on. So there's no fixed way of teaching about here is the gender knowledge, right, that you need to have.
It's based off of a subjective experience.
Yes, but then there's also, I think, there's a way to give people the tools to approach something with a gender lens so that they can recognize perhaps where gender might be important, where it might be important to understand, you know, how gender affects experiences and so on. And this is particularly central now with peacekeeping, with counterinsurgency, counterterrorism context, where the boundaries between kind of military and civilian are being eroded. So military actors and soldiers are engaging with civilians all the time. So I think I'll leave it there because this is so much more Catherine's expertise. But what I would say is that I think it's more, or it should be more about giving people the tools to recognize the centrality of a gender lens than it is about giving people a fixed body of knowledge about what constitutes a gendered experience.
Yeah, and I think you're spot on. It needs to be more than a tick box exercise for military institutions that they've done pre-deployment gender training, and we need to think much more about kind of what that training consists of. So my own research on NATO looks in a way a bit more broadly at how NATO works to teach gender to its member states and teach certain meanings of gender. So in my work, I build on Cynthia Enloe's work, where she talks about NATO as a teaching machine. So one prime example of this, which I've kind of explored a little bit further than Enloe was able to do in the 80s, is the NATO Committee on Gender Perspectives. So this is a once a year, 4-day meeting where NATO member and now partner states send their gender experts to Brussels to talk about gender. They work in kind of syndicates and work on particular problems that have come up that year. So here's a space where these individuals are coming together, learning, socializing with each other, learning how other countries and how NATO sees gender, what it values, how it relates to operational effectiveness and other military issues such as that. So they then go back to their own militaries. So we can see how NATO works as this teaching machine, filtering down particular meanings of gender to the member states. So that's maybe a little bit different to kind of formal training programs and things like that, but I think just as important an aspect to highlight.
So there was something else that I really wanted to ask. Military organizations are not typically thought of as institutions that espouse feminism, but to what extent do feminist concepts around war, violence, and peacekeeping appear in military training?
I'll start off with that one. So I think it's important here that we make a clear distinction between feminist institutions and institutions which seek to engage with gender mainstreaming and or the implementation of Resolution 1325 and the Women, Peace and Security agenda, because the two don't necessarily correlate. And I would say that military actors are an example of that. But another caveat, that's not to say that there aren't feminists working within those institutions, nor that those institutions cannot support feminist goals, but it's rather to say that their raison d'etre is not feminist. And there's a very real danger that these institutions could co-opt feminist goals. And I think that's also why it's important that we as feminists develop knowledge of these institutions so we can understand what it means when NATO, for example, engages with Women, Peace and Security, and how it has been positioned within NATO. So in my work, I look at the role of the Public Diplomacy Division and the real danger that NATO engaging with Women, Peace and Security becomes just a, in inverted commas, kind of good news story for the alliance and doesn't necessarily lead to the change within NATO that would support feminist ends.
Yeah, I mean, to follow from that, so looking at peacekeeping, for example, if you think of it in terms of kind of two ways of understanding desirable outcomes in feminist terms. So peacekeepers might have to help decommission female soldiers, for example. You know, you look at Sri Lanka, Sierra Leone, other places where there have been large numbers of female soldiers, lots of other places in the world. And so their needs when they are, Colombia, an excellent example, you know, in the recent peace process, their needs are affected by the fact that they are women and they're processed through disarmament and demobilization and reintegration is connected to their gender identity and the wider perceptions in society of how, you know, women should behave and act. And sometimes there are issues with reintegration for women that are different to the issues faced by men. So anybody involved in peacekeeping or peace promotion, peace support activities needs to recognize, I think, Enlo's question, kind of where are the women in militaries or in societies affected by war? Women often face much greater instances of sexual violence, how to cope with that. Women who are displaced have specific needs. And that's not to say that, so that's not to necessarily say we should only focus on women, because a gender lens is also about recognizing kind of the particularities of the male masculine experience and also intersections with other identities, sexualities and race, ethnicities and other things. But just to keep it as an example on women, peacekeepers tangibly need to recognize the impact of their activities, their peace-based activities, peace work, on women who face particular challenges as women, right? So that's one thing. So that training, that's very concrete. And that training, I think, is there to a certain extent. Operations are learning, and mistakes are made, but there is some effort to have gender specialists and so on, and civilian liaisons within these frameworks, within these organizations, within operational mandates that do this work. So that's increasingly important, literally, tangibly deal with women and gendered needs. But then the kind of secondary dimension, and Catherine, I think, talked about this, is that how far, of course, the inclusion of women's experience is central to feminism, but more broadly, the inclusion of a feminist lens at places is not compatible with military institutions, because a lot of feminist thinking is anti-militarist, is anti-war, and sees militarism as part of a wider spectrum of violence, right? So I think that there's two tiers to this, that is kind of the tangible training of literally the practicalities that are faced on a day-to-day basis and how important it is to recognize differently gendered experiences within a post-conflict or a conflict situation. And then there's secondarily the kind of overarching ideological dimension, which I think, as Catherine said, that it's not impossible for training to espouse elements of that kind of wider ideological perspective that is feminist, but there is a tension there.
So this may have been something that you've already covered in your answers to some of my questions, but what challenges are present when teaching on gender in relation to conflict?
So talking specifically about the university level, and I think probably this... Actually, yeah, this also relates to kind of military training. So it's about making sure that gender is more than a token class on a module, that it's kind of put at the same level as other topics, and there's not the dreaded gender week, which students don't turn up to, that it's integrated kind of throughout courses where relevant. But I think actually it's also thinking more broadly and taking seriously how the way we teach is gendered, but how also what we teach is gendered. So part of this is about looking at our reading lists and asking where the women are, and ensuring that there are women every week in our assigned reading. So this is something I know I've started to do every year, and something at Newcastle we take quite seriously, so making sure women are there every week, also that not all women are feminists, and women also know stuff about realism, about strategic studies, about conflict management without having the feminist lens on it. But if we're looking at how our teaching is gendered, we need to make sure that their knowledge is there. And I think there's a real drive in politics and IR as a discipline to recruit more people who are experts in gender. So I know King's has made some recent appointments in this area, and Newcastle's also making appointments in this area at the moment. So I think we need to kind of make sure that universities follow through with that commitment and make sure that those people aren't the only people doing gender or thinking about gender in their teaching, and that actually it's something that we all take seriously, because it actually matters for our students.
Yeah, I mean, that's such a comprehensive answer. In terms of challenges, to make sure that feminist courses gender courses aren't siloed, as Catherine has already said, or become the dreaded gender week. But also, I think for me, one of the big challenges in teaching in this area is exactly how to stay true to a feminist pedagogical ethic, right? A kind of like, in what ways, how to teach that lines up, that lines up both with the expectations of the university. So you're doing your job, you're preparing students, you're meeting the criteria that they need from you and all of the rest of it. But, you know, you're adhering to the ethical parameters mandated by your perspective as a feminist. And that, I think, increasingly is also tied to the wider project of decolonization, paying attention to kind of what knowledge, whose knowledge, and how it's being disseminated through the system in universities in different ways. But, you know, as much as that's a challenge, what I've also found is that in the era of Me Too, Black Lives Matter, other kind of global social movements, there is actually a greater expectation that the university experience will reflect and recognize what people are already talking about, that you know, that sexual abuse, sexual discrimination isn't about desire, it's about power, it's about the way that society, including war making, is organized. And certainly, you know, my students here at King's last year in gender and global politics very much understood this. So actually, I think all of, I 100% agree with Catherine has outlined so well the challenges, but there's also a challenge in terms of meeting students' expectations that sometimes they're already there. They've already thought about these issues that Me Too brings up, that the wider decolonization, you know, why is my university so white? Why is my syllabus so white? That these movements have already made them think along these lines. They know about intersectionality. They understand these dynamics in the world around them. And we need to create the right spaces for them to enhance those understandings, to be able to talk through those issues and to kind of learn international relations through those lenses in a way that also corresponds with their needs at university. So yeah, I think one of our major challenges is also rising to the expectations of the students who are kind of already asking us to think about Me Too, to think about intersectionality.
I think just to add on to that, I think it's about doing our job. Like, this is what the students want. A lot of these demands have come from students. And we need to decolonize and think about how what we teach is gendered and rectify that. I know at Newcastle we just introduced a new module on gender, sex and power because students ask for more on gender. So I think there's a real drive there, and it is quite, despite global challenges, as I'll phrase them, that this perhaps is a positive side of that, that students are thinking about these things in a way that they could ignore before, they can't now.
Looking to learn a little more about the importance of learning and teaching on gender, and how the School of Security Studies intends to approach diversity challenges, I met up with the school's new senior lecturer and diversity and inclusion lead, Dr. Amanda Chisholm.
Welcome to the War Studies Podcast. Can you introduce yourself for our listeners?
Yeah, thanks for inviting me. My name is Amanda Chisholm, and I'm a senior lecturer here based at the school level. So I teach across both defense studies and war studies. And I've only been here for a matter of a month now, so I'm still finding my feet, but I'm really excited to be here. I come from Newcastle University. I was there for 4 years as a lecturer in international relations.
So what is the importance of teaching and learning on gender in the context of security studies?
Well, I think what gender does when we use it as an analytical framing to understand security is it really reorientates us who we think is involved in security, the broader conversations of security, so and where we locate security or insecurity happening. So, you know, immediately what comes to mind is Cynthia Enloe's provocation of where are the women? And this is a simple question, but it's actually a very profound question at the same time when we pose that to the broader international relations, but also security studies. Because what we quickly find is that women are often written out of broader security understandings. When we look at security generally, we look at the state, we look at military, we look at military organizations like NATO, for example. And generally, we think about military and state leaders who are, for the most part, men. And we see war and security as a male space, right? Which involves majority of men. But when asking where are the women, what Cynthia Enloe and other feminists have highlighted to us is that women play an absolutely foundational role to the waging of war. For example, we have feminists who look at the military household and show the ways in which the household, the labor that the household has to take on in order for soldiers to go overseas on military missions, but also the ways in which the household and civilian communities writ large have to buy in to particular military logics that the world is a dangerous place and we're safer with a large aggressive military, for example. Those sorts of logics, when we buy into them, enable a defense industry to develop the way it has developed, for example. So these are two small examples, but what they highlight is that women do matter and gender is important to orientate us to think beyond the usual suspects and the usual framings of security.
Also, I wanted to ask, what are a few key challenges faced when teaching on gender in the context of conflict and security?
I think the challenges depend on who the audience is. So when you're running a specific module on gender and global politics, as I'm doing right now here, in ways you're lecturing to the converted. And what I mean is the people who select those modules are already interested in understanding what global politics looks like and what security looks like from a gendered perspective. So in many ways, teaching to students like that who are engaged and who are enthusiastic about the readings and the topics is very much a pleasure and a joy. And I learned so much from those students as well with their own diverse perspectives that they bring to the table. King's is fantastic for the diversity of students across gender, racial, but also geographies are coming from is certainly a global classroom. And it's great. It's a joy to be teaching to that global classroom. With a different audience on more of lecturing, giving guest lectures on gender and global politics to introductory modules, first year or second year modules. I think one of the challenges is to get students to think that gender as an analytical framework is legitimate framework to understanding global politics. And it's not just something nice or something kind of on the side that we can add on, but rather it is a theoretical framing that reorientates, like I said before, how we conceptualize of what global politics is and how we conceptualize what security is. And so it's important to bring gender into conversation with these more what I call the usual suspects of global politics, the realism, the neoliberalism, the constructivism, for example. And I think where this continues to be a challenge is in part the ways in which we are told about what the world looks like and what our role in the world is. And this is, you know, through broader media spaces, but the ways in which we in the public talk about issues of war and conflict For example, feminism never features, right? Or gender never features. And so then it doesn't become part of our normal sensibilities. And so then when we're in a classroom, bright, talented students here at King's, the challenge here is to show that whilst we might not as intellectuals think about gender, it is always there. It is always functioning in the background. Yeah, and so I think the challenge is to really get students to think about that, to take it seriously, and then to be comfortable when you do take it seriously, how it does change. It really changes how you think about global politics and your own relationship to global politics.
Lastly, as the diversity and inclusion lead for the School of Security Studies, what ideas and approaches are you wanting to bring to the school?
That's a great question. And like I said, I've only been here for a month, so I'm still very much finding my feet. But I think in relation to the previous question you asked, a big commitment that I want to work on across both departments here is a commitment to diversifying the curriculum itself. And bringing more inclusion into the curriculum. And what I mean by that is the curriculum that involves the reading lists. So the readings that we get our students to engage in and to think about. Also the classroom in terms of what themes, what topics, what provocations do we get our students to discuss and engage with. And then the third one is the external speakers, the expert speakers. Who do we actually invite into the classroom? I think these three components of the curriculum really matter because what they intentionally or unintentionally do is they produce a broader narrative to the students about who are the experts, where do we find security, and how do we talk about security, right? And what we find in great scholarship that's been done across the UK in terms of a general curriculum audit. So this is including, Oxford, Cambridge, LSC, UCL, for example, is that there is a gender gap in the curriculum. And the gender gap is ranging around 20% women, 80% men within who are the expert speakers and the reading lists themselves. Why this split matters, I think, is what it unintentionally reproduces is that men are the experts in security, and women are not, right? And we know that this is just not true. With the vibrancy and global kind of reach of different perspectives on security, we can see that it is a global discussion that involves men and women, not only within Europe or the West writ large, but broadly, within spaces of Africa, South America, the Middle East, for example. And this matters because this then, when we acknowledge this and when we start bringing these different voices into the classroom, they produce competing tensions and debates and really interesting discussions. And these discussions, I think, then for the students, foster in the students critical thinkers, right? Where they can explore these vibrant and diverse perspectives, bring them into conversation with each other, have a discussion. And what I think then what this does is then if we diversify the curriculum, starting right at the classroom, we are fostering a pathway to producing university graduates who are critical global thinkers. And this is really, I think, what we need in contemporary international spaces that are increasingly becoming polarized and creating silos in terms of, who we talk to and engage with. What we really need more than ever is adults who are global citizens, who do look outwards and who are able to engage with diversity of thoughts in critical ways.
Thank you so much for joining us, Amanda Chisholm.
Thank you for inviting me. It was great to be here, and hopefully we can have another chat soon.
A huge thanks to our interviewees for providing their perspectives on teaching and learning gender and highlighting key challenges that are faced across institutions today. We look forward to hearing more from you again soon. That concludes this edition of the War Studies podcast. If you like this podcast, don't forget to like, comment, and share it wherever you listen to podcasts. Also, for more news and information on upcoming events, please visit our website at kcl.ac.uk/warstudies or follow us on Twitter. Thank you for listening.